Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to school to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Recognizing the value of financial advice since 1937, Putnam Investments, a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
If U.S. automakers were dangling from a fifth-story window by one hand yesterday, today they pulled both hands back onto that ledge. Uncle Sam came to the rescue, not with a ladder, but with an energy drink. And Detroit is still just barely hanging on. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Gather.com. If it's happening in the world, it's being discussed on Gather. People are talking about the economy at Gather.com. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Calvert.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Glad to have you with us on this Friday. It is the 19th day of December. President Bush gave U.S. automakers an early holiday gift today, after weeks of backing and forthing among the House, Senate, and White House, and no agreement in sight. The administration used a portion of the bank bailout money to put $17.4 billion under Detroit's tree. Auto industry analysts say it is a temporary lifeline, kind of a gussied-up bridge loan. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
This bridge loan reaches right into the Obama administration.
Well, I wouldn't call it sleight of hand, but I do think it's a matter of kicking the can to the next administration.
Gerald Myers ran the American Motors Corporation for 4 years and now teaches at the University of Michigan.
See, I think what Bush has done is said, I don't know how to solve this problem. Let's see what Obama can do.
The first thing Obama will have to do is pay up. President Bush's plan gives GM and Chrysler $13.4 billion right away. Obama will have to release $4 billion more from the remaining Treasury bailout money. And it will be up to Obama to decide if GM and Chrysler meet a series of requirements by March 31st. If they don't, they have to give the money back. GM CEO Rick Wagoner.
And I'm highly confident we'll be able to meet that test.
Wagoner is confident because it's a test with no wrong answers. The automakers have to prove they're financially viable, meeting certain flexible requirements. But if they miss the benchmarks, that's okay. They just have to explain why. Honest, the dog ate my budget. But Michelle Krebs of EdmondsAutoObserver.com says flexible targets are appropriate.
Frankly, I think that's only fair because the automakers do not have control over the entire economic situation.
And independent auto analyst Marianne Keller says President Bush didn't have time to lay out more specific requirements.
When you think about when this whole thing blew up, we're really only talking about, 5 weeks? That's not time to really assess what has to happen.
Unfortunately for President-elect Obama, he'll have plenty of time. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Can you imagine life without MP3s? Yeah, me neither. It's the format that lets us download high-quality music files and fast. Of course, it's also what makes it easy to illegally trade those files without paying for them. For years, the Recording Industry Association of America has been suing netizens, accusing them of illegally sharing music files. Little kids, single moms, and a whole slew of college students were threatened with enormous fines. But that era, it seems, has now met the fate of the 8-tracks and cassettes and, yes, CDs that came before it. Rico Galliano reports.
Last year, in an interview with Marketplace, CEO Mitch Bainwall defended the RIAA's litigious anti-piracy campaign.
It took some pretty gutsy actions by the music industry and others to establish that, in fact, intellectual property is worthy of protection.
But the RIAA now confirms it's easing up on the gutsy actions and going with what seems like a lighter touch. Instead of lawsuits, they're getting service providers to tell file-trading customers to cease and desist.
Users who don't shape up would risk losing internet access. Yahoo tech blogger Christopher Null says a new approach is long overdue.
I think it's just finally the RIAA coming to its senses after many, many years of getting nowhere and spending lots and lots of money and really having nothing in the end to show for it.
Except, of course, a lot of bad publicity. Critics called the industry's lawsuits, well, lots of things, but the word we can use on the air is abusive. Meanwhile, Null says movie producers had more luck getting internet service providers to shut down movie sharing sites.
That's been a strategy that's arguably worked fairly well, and it hasn't made them out to be the kind of heavy that the RIAA looks like right now in many users' eyes.
But can it put a stop to piracy? Null says probably not. Service providers haven't always been eager to punish their customers. Of course, some analysts speculate the money the industry saves in lawsuit fees could be used to persuade ISPs to be more aggressive watchdogs. In Los Angeles, I'm Rico Galliano for Marketplace.
Looks like the top half of the country will be getting a white Christmas this year. Storms are expected throughout the Pacific Northwest, Midwest, and Northeast. Could be fun for skiers and other snow dogs, but it is one big lump of white coal for retailers. This is supposed to be the biggest shopping weekend of the year, and it's not like sale prices could go any lower. Or could they? Marketplace's Jeremy Hobson has that story from New York.
The other day, I got a letter from Crate & Barrel. It says I can get, quote, ridiculous 60% savings starting the day after Christmas. Seems like an odd strategy. Don't they want me in the stores now?
What they are anticipating is that they're going to have more merchandise left on the shelves than they even wanted.
That's retail analyst Patricia Edwards at Storehouse Partners. She says the sales are going to get even better as stores try to make room for new merchandise.
They're going to have to discount just to move it. The sales after Christmas this year, I think, are going to be bigger than I have seen in my 20-plus year career.
Some shoppers are onto this.
Oh, definitely. That's a factor.
Selena Curry spent the morning bargain hunting in downtown Los Angeles.
Yeah, I think the later the better, because the sales are better, better deals, and you get the extra 20% off with the 40% off, and so it's cool.
All these sales may get shoppers in the doors, but Patricia Edwards says they're not buying gift cards because they're not on sale.
If people don't have the gift cards, they're going to be less likely to go out to the malls. And I think that it could lead to some more pain when we get to January and February.
Which means this bleak shopping season may be felt long after the holiday decorations come down. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson for Marketplace.
It was a mixed end to the last full week of trading for 2008. Dow down, S&P and NASDAQ up, but just barely. We'll have details when we do the numbers. It is less than a week to go until Christmas, and parents are already bracing themselves for wrap rage. You know, that's the mental condition that develops while you're trying to pry open all those hermetically sealed toys and electronics. So-called clamshell packaging has helped keep thieves away for years, but those plastic shells are notoriously hard to open, and I swear you could lose a finger just trying to get that one-inch memory card out of its cage. Sarah Gardner reports from the Marketplace Sustainability Desk that relief is in sight.
When Sony Electronics held its annual sales meeting this year, the highlight was an in-house video, three executives trying to open a package of Sony headphones.
The first person who opens up your package and removes the headphones is the winner. Best of luck. Get ready. Get set. Go!
One bites into the clamshell package. Another tries sawing through it. Fake blood spurts from his hand. All in good fun, but Sony says it's serious about what it calls its Death to the Clamshell campaign. Sony's Gemini Babla is on the case.
We're looking at some really exciting alternatives, working with different types of glues and materials, recyclable papers.
Sony vows to roll out new containers at Best Buy and Walmart next year. But Microsoft is already selling some computer mice at Best Buy that open with a tear strip on each side. It's working with Amazon.com, too. Amazon is shipping 19 toys and electronics this holiday season in what it calls frustration-free packaging. Amazon convinced Microsoft, Fisher-Price, and some others to jump on board.
All aboard! Hop on board the animal train! Okay, so we're going to start with the Fisher-Price Sing & Go Choo Choo, which is an adorable product.
Amazon's Patty Smith stopped by Marketplace to show off the new and simpler packaging. But first, she forced us to open up the frustrating kind. Here's Marketplace senior editor Lisa Tucker taking a stab at it.
Oh, my God. Well, I got one corner open.
What tool? Do you need tools yet?
Well, silly question.
I need, a machete. Do we have a machete? No.
She just needed a box cutter. And 10 seconds later, a bandage. For real. That's when Smith took pity and brought out the new packaging. Inside one cardboard postal box was a single plastic bag with the choo-choo pieces tightly locked together and a few major parts, gasp, in no packaging at all.
There's none of this plastic clamshell casing or these plastic-coated wire ties or these four-color boxes that may or may not be recyclable depending on where you live. It's just plain brown corrugate, 100% recyclable.
Of course, an online retailer like Amazon doesn't have to worry about theft protection or shelf appeal. That's why the Choo Choo and other products repackaged for Amazon will still be sold the traditional way in stores, for now. Sony's Gemini Babla says it's hard to come up with clamshell substitutes that foil thieves and also dazzle.
The packaging needs to be a merchandising tool. It has to look good. It has to reflect our brand values. So for us, packaging, the look of it is a critical element of the success of the brand.
Babla says Sony wants any containers it uses to even feel good to the customer. A few companies have designed clamshell alternatives where consumers can pop the product out of the package like a piece of gum in a blister pack. Environmentalists say the ideal, not yet realized, is packaging that can be recycled into another useful product and doesn't put you in the emergency room or the loony bin.
And they used 50 wires. Ugh.
In Los Angeles, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Ordinarily, this time of year is a rather quiet one on the news front, but these are not ordinary times. As you heard up top, the White House gave out a last-minute stocking stuffer for the auto industry today. And Santa came early at the Fed this week with that big interest rate cut. Oh, and that Bernie Madoff Ponzi story? Well, that one just keeps on giving. Joining us for the weekly wrap on all this and more is Katie Benner from Fortune Magazine. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
And David Leonhardt, glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Katie, real quick, just put in context for us, how big is this Madoff scandal?
First of all, we don't actually know how much money he supposedly lost or buried or whatever it was he did with it, but the estimated number is $50 billion. That is the annual revenue of a company the size of Pfizer.
Is there any way to estimate how much damage something like this can do to the economy writ large? Is it that big? Will it have an effect kind of beyond Madoff's clients?
It's interesting because I don't think we can yet estimate any damages because we cannot yet estimate how much money was actually lost. We have no idea how much money he actually gathered from investors because the amount of assets under management that he filed with the SEC was $17 billion, and that's probably false since at least $35 billion was given to him, according to the people who say they've given him money. We have no idea what he did with it. If we look at today's news, we've seen investigators have found trading records. They found no counterparties for those trades. It's possible he was never even trading the money. So what was he doing with it? And where is it? It could still exist or it could not.
But David, you know, just when you think things can't get worse, something like this happens. It's awfully scary for people. Is this going to have any ripple effect, at least maybe spur some more regulation?
I think that we really already had the rules on the books to try to prevent a situation like this. And what we've seen this week with the SEC's admission that they didn't do what they should have been doing is that they were asleep at the switch. And so I don't know that it needs to create any new regulations. But I do think, as is already likely to happen, it is a reason that the atmosphere within regulatory agencies should change. And we shouldn't simply assume that because businesses are doing something that it's okay.
Well, David, you know, another big story this week was the Fed's interest rate cut going a little lower than most folks expected, kind of caught a lot of people off guard. What was your reaction?
Well, people are clearly scared of deflation. They're scared that we're going to get into a spiral in which prices start dropping. and it's hard for them to stop that. And the reason that can happen is that if people start to anticipate that prices are going to keep falling, they stop shopping, right? If you know that a piece of furniture is going to be less expensive 3 months from now than it is today, well, you're going to wait. And that waiting weakens the economy further. And the reason deflation is so scary is that it makes people's debts essentially harder to pay off. And so the Fed is really attuned to the risks of deflation. And that's, I think, the main reason that the Fed acted so aggressively.
But, Katie, it doesn't seem to have really had much effect, at least not in the last several days.
Well, I think one of the reasons is psychological, and that's because of the Fed's statement, not necessarily because of the size of the rate cut. Having the Fed come out and say, we will also be willing to buy illiquid assets, and we will be willing to buy them in large quantities, and that we will keep this rate this low for as long as it takes, it signaled to people that there is still no trust in the system. And there's so little trust and so little knowledge about how much anything is possibly worth right now that the Fed may have to step in and make the market itself. Just that idea does not inspire confidence.
It's a tricky situation because on the one hand, there are all sorts of reasons to fear that the Fed's move may not work. If people are really worried about what's going on in the economy, low interest rates aren't going to cause them to spend or invest. On the other hand, there always seems to be this moment in which the Fed acts and their actions haven't yet taken effect. And people start to get nervous. Oh, no, the Fed is just pushing on a string. It is no longer able to do what it used to be able to do. But the fact is, we really need to wait in order to know whether the Fed's actions will have an effect.
This whole notion that the Fed comes out and says, we will do anything, you can't help but kind of wonder, oh, wow, we must be in pretty dire straits here.
It sort of means that nobody else will do anything, and that's the problem.
David and Katie, thank you both for bringing a little context to the news of the week, and happy holidays to you.
You too. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Katie Benner of Fortune Magazine and David Leonhardt with The New York Times. Coming up, Obama and the manger.
He was brave. He went through so much. I also have Berlusconi and Carla Bruni I bought last week. I wanted her because she is stylish.
Oh, yes, she is. But first, let's do the numbers. The auto bailout helped two of the major indexes shift into gear today, but the Dow moved into reverse. At the end of the day, the blue chips gave back 0.3%, 25 points, to close at 8,579. The NASDAQ went the other direction, ticking up 0.75%, 11 points, to end at 1,564. And the S&P gained just over 0.25%, 2 points, to finish at 887. For the week, the Dow was down 0.7%, the NASDAQ up 1.5%, and the S&P added 0.8%. Now to the automakers. GM revved up more than 22% on the bailout news. Ford pulled up nearly 4%, even though it is not taking any government money. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.12%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Clarkson Potter, publishers of The Splendid Tables, How to Eat Supper, a holiday gift idea for people who love to eat. Now available at splendidtable.org. Do the work for you. Download Marketplace's After the Bell, a podcast which makes sense of a week's worth of business news. Just go to marketplace.org and click on the podcast link.
On the Marketplace Statebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. President Bush is scheduled to visit Walter Reed Army Medical Center. It's the first day of Hanukkah. The Festival of Lights begins at sundown on Sunday. And on December 22, 1937, Lincoln Tunnel opened to traffic. It runs under the Hudson River, linking Midtown Manhattan and Central New Jersey. The toll back in the day, 50 cents. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Tess Vigeland, in for Kai Rizdal. Over the last few days, China has been celebrating a big anniversary. 30 years ago, Beijing inched open the door for free market reforms. And we all know where that led. Today, China is the world's fourth largest economy, giving third place Germany a run for its money. But here's the subtext to all this crowing. The frail global economy is hitting China pretty hard. And that's raising the usual questions about social unrest in an authoritarian country. Marketplace's Scott Tong joins me now from the road. Ni hao, Scott.
Ni hao to you, Tess. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Tell us where you are and what you're seeing.
I'm in a gritty factory area of southern China called Hojia. Now, you've probably not heard of this place before, but it puts out tons of shoes and sofas that it get exported all around the world. So this is the center of low-cost labor in China. And I've seen signs of worker dissatisfaction as I've been here. Yesterday, my taxi driver said on Christmas Day, the cab drivers all across this urban area of more than 10 million people are planning to strike. And just down the street from my hotel, yesterday I saw about a dozen shoe factory workers protesting at the local labor department office. Their factory shut down, the boss skipped town, and he owes many of them back wages, which you're also seeing in much of China.
Well, those don't sound like terribly new issues to China, Scott.
Well, Tess, they're not brand new to China, as you say. Corruption, labor abuse, wealth inequality. We've heard all those things before. They tend to get magnified when the economy slows down here. And the thing we have to remember is the Communist Party is an unelected government, and their tacit social contract with the people is we'll make you wealthier than you were before, we'll create jobs for you so long as you keep your head down and don't complain. And that deal gets tested at a time like this.
Scott, how do we know if these signs will add up to some sort of political event, social strife?
We don't. The other night I had dinner with a big group of furniture workers, and they all make something like 50 cents an hour. And one of them said, you know, unless something big sparks a big social event in China, the Chinese workers have an amazing ability to suck it up. In Chinese, they say, we can eat bitterness. So will this ever get to critical mass? That's a debate in China.
You know, the economic slowdown is predicted to get even worse as we move into next year. Should we assume that political pressures will too?
Here in China, everyone expects them to. First of all, early in the year in 2009 is Chinese New Year, when the workers tend to go home back to their villages and they talk to their friends and they hang out. And the test will be when they come back to the factory areas of China. If they can't find enough work, where is their anger going to be directed?
Well, as things heat up, Scott, I wonder how could that storm come back to hit the U.S.?
We could see the signs of a trade war. What Beijing might do to keep these factories afloat and to keep these jobs for the export workers is to lower the value of China's currency, provide other kinds of subsidies that to many are considered protectionism. And if Washington fires back, particularly the new Obama administration, we don't know where that kind of thing leads. Something else to keep in mind, Tess, is how China got here as far as some of these labor issues is connected to the American consumer. When the U.S. company, the brand owner, comes and it hammers down the prices it pays, you know, for the China price, as they call it, they've got to cheat on the quality. And sometimes the managers or the factory owners, they cheat their workers, and you get some of these labor issues. Something to keep in mind, how it's connected indirectly to the American consumer.
All right. Marketplace's Scott Tong joining us with a reporter's notebook from the Guangdong province in China. How about for that notebook, a little bit of a language lesson? How do I tell you Happy New Year?
新年快乐. Happy New Year.
新年快乐 to you, Scott.
All right, Tess. Thanks.
Here's a Christmas riddle for you. What do President-elect Barack Obama, Italian leader Silvio Berlusconi, French First Lady Carla Bruni, and the Pope have in common? No, they don't all think they're the Second Coming. At least they're not admitting to it. Megan Williams traveled to an outdoor market in Naples to get an answer.
Gennaro Di Virgilio carefully paints a red tie on a clay figurine of Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi. His Naples shop window is crammed with other figurines. The late opera star Pavarotti, soccer players, and the Pope.
Di Virgilio is one of dozens of merchants in Naples who specialize in nativity scenes. That's right, along with little statuettes of Mary, Joseph, and the three wise men, he's peddling famous characters to toss into the manger mix. And some locals, too. The wine cellar, the pizza chef, and big points for realism, the pickpocket. This year, an American politician is proving to be the northern star for shoppers.
Barack Obama.
President-elect Barack Obama.
Accompagnato dalla moglie Michelle.
Di Virgilio says he sells about 250 miniature Obamas a week at $40 each. Nativity scenes are an 800-year-old tradition in Naples. The shops go on for blocks and attract thousands of tourists. But it's been tough recently. This year, the recession has thinned out the crowds. Last season, it was the Naples garbage crisis. Di Virgilio says he tried to work the theme in.
Sì, abbiamo fatto Berlusconi con I sacchetti. Con la spazzatura.
He had Prime Minister Berlusconi holding a couple of garbage bags, but he says he drew the line at creating a little illegal dump outside the manger.
No, meglio non farla, sennò facciamo una brutta promozione al presepe.
We don't want to turn people off nativity scenes, he says. Not much chance of that with Obama on the guest list. He's a big draw for shoppers like Maristella Guarcino. She's here to buy a figurine of the president-elect for her little manger at home. She says he fully deserves his spot beside the Christ child.
È stato coraggioso, l'unico che ha accettato tutto.
He was brave. He went through so much. I also have Berlusconi and Carla Bruni I bought last week. I wanted her because she is stylish.
Some nativity newcomers haven't sold quite so well, like the guy who didn't win the election.
Questo è McCain, zero.
He has sold zero McCains, just like when it comes to Christ. When it comes to presidents, there's only room for one. In Naples, I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
And we've got photos of those figurines on our website. It's marketplace.org.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, managing a wide range of tax-exempt portfolios. Details at putnam.com. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication.
And this final note, who better to hand out government money to small businesses than someone who's used to handing out big chunks of private money to small businesses? At least that may be part of the reason President-elect Barack Obama nominated Karen Mills to lead the Small Business Administration. Mills has spent years as a venture capitalist and currently heads up a private equity firm in Maine. With her selection today, the Obama cabinet is complete, pending Senate confirmation, of course. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow lost 25 points, 0.3%. The Nasdaq rose 11 points, 0.75%. And the S&P 500 added 2 points, just over 0.25%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste Wesson. The executive producer is J.J. Yore. Coming up on Monday, parents juggle a lean Christmas with their kids.
Because he's been able to grasp some of our financial woes, he actually only asked for 2 things this year.
I'm Tess Vigeland. Enjoy your weekend.
American Public Media.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.